Support for the Radio Cafe comes from the Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation by Dr. Eve L. Ewing with Wayne Au on Wednesday, November 13th at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. Writer and sociologist Dr. Eve L. Ewing, an assistant professor at the University of Chicago, creates multiple genres and forms: academic writing and scholarship, teaching, cultural organizing, poetry, comic book, and fiction. Her research is focused on the impact of racism, social inequality, and urban policy on American public schools and young people. She is the author, most recently, of the poetry collection 1919, the nonfiction work Ghosts in the Schoolyard, Racism and School Closings on Chicago's South Side, and the Ironheart series for Marvel Comics. Tickets available at the Lensic, 988-1234, or lensic.org. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Mona Malik. She's writer and performer of the one-woman show Motherhood, Barbells, and Tee Shots, and Rod Harrison, who's co-creator and director of that show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
And the show opens on the 1st of November, so we'll be talking about the logistics a little more toward the end of the show. But this is a one-woman show, Mona, basically a true story about your life as the mother of a transgender child. What was the process by which you decided to tell this story and really make it public? A lot of heartfelt, a lot of what one might think of as sort of private emotions and experiences.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was never really my intention to create a piece. I had just started writing, finally, to get some of my thoughts down on paper. For years, I had been a sort of avid journaler, and I have a blog, and as my son was going through transition, I stopped, which was kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
We were going through all of these things, and I couldn't put anything on paper. And I did one day after something it's actually a piece in the show. Something happened. I went home, and I wrote it down, and I wrote another piece. And I think I wrote a third piece, and then I emailed Rod and said, do you want to read something I wrote? Do you want to read I think I called it my scratchings. Do you want to read my scratchings? And I think it was just a way to reach out to Rod as my friend to just sort of take a look at it and process it with me. And that's how it started.
And then how did the two of you start really working together and forming this into a crafted piece?
Well, we talked about you know, the material, and then obviously the discussion is about style and how would you deliver this material. And Mona and I have worked together since 97. We first did King Lear together back in 97 at Theater Work. And we also spent many years together with Theater Grotesco, creating original physical theater. And we also found sport at relatively the same time. We joined a CrossFit gym and started working out. And so I had a thought while in the gym about oftentimes in theater and in dance, there is a push to make the strenuous look effortless. You know, we see these dancers are graceful and composed, but that's athleticism and it's work. And so what would happen if you took out the sort of act of composed and together and showed that strenuous rigor? And so we worked on a project in 2012 that was a Tennessee Williams love scene. And we started working on that while doing a weightlifting complex. And so what happens when you try and tell this love story while the performers are going through this strenuous physical activity? And it was really interesting, and I felt like a fertile thing. Other things came up, and we had to drop that experiment. But when Mona showed me these texts that became this show, I thought, well, this is a perfect chance to add physicality to this show and to add effort. So we began thinking about how we could tell this story while also using Olympic weightlifting to tell it.
Yeah, I mean, you, Mona, just watching you is sort of exhausting. You're lifting these significant weights. I mean, that's sort of the frame and the main prop, I guess you would call it, in the piece. And I mean, do you feel like the weightlifting is a metaphor for something in the show?
Well, weightlifting can be a metaphor for life, but definitely for a parent, being a parent. You know, as soon as you think you have a handle on something, like, I can handle this weight, and you got to put more on. And, you know, you have to keep working at lifting more and more weight. And that's just sort of what we do as parents, and I think in life in general. You know, there's always more you have to do and more you have to put on your back. And what is it to sometimes fail at a lift? And we fail as parents all the time. I joke with my kids sometimes, like, okay, this is the 15th failure today, you know. And it's, you just get back under the bar and keep working.
Well, and you are quite an athlete. I mean, you do this, what is it called, the Highland?
Yeah, Highland Athletics or Celtic Games is another phrase for it.
So you basically are throwing things.
Yeah, I throw things. Throw things for fun. It's an all-day event. There's 9 different events, so you have to be relatively proficient in multiple ways of throwing. Some things we throw with pitchforks. There's the famous event, which is the caber, which looks like a big telephone pole that you have to throw, but there's stones and weights and hammers and yeah, so.
And Mona is modest and won't tell you. Mona is a world champion Highland Games athlete.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the frame, but the story is about having, you've got 2 children and the second child is a transgender boy. How did you find out that your child was transgender?
It was kind of a long process for him to come out. You know, he initially played with the idea of being gender neutral, and I think that was his attempt at trying to figure out what it was he was feeling. But he didn't actually tell me face to face. He didn't tell either his father face to face either. We got text messages, which is, I think, a safe way for some people, especially younger generation, to feel like they can communicate. It was jarring to not actually have a conversation about it, but to have it be texted was, yeah.
And so it goes on from there, but I mean, what was, not so much that moment, but then the process after that, what was that like for you and your family? He had a dad, but you were divorced, and so he also mm-hmm. had a stepdad.
Right.
And it really became a whole family thing, and it wasn't easy.
No, it's not. And that's why it's really critical for people to find whatever support it is that fits them. I mean, I did what I do with a lot of things, was I hopped on the internet and did a ton of research, and I found, you know, resources for him and resources for us, you know, therapists, psychiatrists, doctors, endocrinologists, and, you know, you reach out and find anybody who has experience with this to find out where they went and what might work for you. And you just keep kind of throwing darts at a dartboard to find what's going to work and what's going to help, because it's frightening, because you don't want to lose your kid, either emotionally, either the connection you have with them, or actually lose your kid. There's a very high suicide rate for transgender kids, transgender
right.
teens. So you just work hard every day trying to find what it is that's going to help hold them on.
There's this moment in the piece where you say that you basically forgot to take care of your elder son and mm-hmm. yourself and your husband and your work. I mean, everything basically
yeah.
went by the wayside in this quest to take care of your transgender son. What is it about that process that's so hard, that's so time consuming, and just kind of all consuming?
I think it's the fear. I really think it's the fear of losing your kid.
Yeah.
I mean, for my son, he dealt with a lot of panic and anxiety. And just to see this bright, challenging, funny person disappear for a while, it's terrifying as a parent. And so to me, my job was just to continue to try and find space for him, you know, and make it a big space so that he could figure things out and he could be himself.
What does that mean? Like leaving him alone? Like introducing him to other trans people?
Trying everything. Yeah. Yeah. I would say, yeah. Do you know, giving him websites, taking him, you know, introducing him to people at the Transgender Resource Center in Albuquerque. I had people who would give me phone numbers or emails of transgender people they knew to try and connect my son with someone. And then a lot of it was leaving him alone for him to figure it out as well. But having that, like, safety, hoping you're having, like, a net around him to keep him safe as well.
As I was watching the piece in rehearsal, I was thinking about the whole, what was then LG or LGB, lesbian, gay, bisexual movement, you know, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things that were happening then was people were asking the same kinds of, call it ignorant or ingenuous or sincere or stupid or whatever questions, mm-hmm. that now they're not asking anymore. I mean, that ship has sailed, I think, to a good place by and large. We're in a better place with acceptance and, you know, just integration of, I mean, we've got a gay person running for president, you know.
Right.
Do you envision that kind of trajectory for trans kids like 30 years from now?
I certainly hope so. I hope we're headed in that direction. And I would, you know, if history, if we want to look at what it was like in the 80s and look at what it's like now, I can hope that we have that same kind of growth and acceptance. Because we do have a very strong pushback. You know, we just had transgender people be evicted from the military. So there's a very strong pushback, and I'm hoping that the pendulum swings like it did.
Talk about the kinds of questions that people ask you or people were asking you during that. I mean, how long has it been since your son came out as trans?
It's been about 5 years.
So he was a teenager.
Yeah. So, you know, the main questions people, the main concerns, and I really look back on it now as a concern. At the time, it feels like a threat when people say, oh, come on, why are you going to let him do this? Well, how can you do this? He's just a child. He can't know who he is. Can't you wait until he's XYZ number of years old? And because you're trying to support your kid, when those questions come in, they feel threatening. It's like, no, I'm trying to do what's right. But I look back on it, and I understand it, you know, is comes from a place of concern and a place of not knowing. If they just don't know.
Right.
You know, and I think people don't know what to ask. And then there's a lot of inappropriate stuff that people ask that really is no one's business. I think for trans people, often they get reduced to physical body parts. And it's rude.
Yeah.
You'd never ask anybody else that. And so why are you asking that at all?
Well, and you make a comparison to, and I know numbers of women who've had this experience. When you were pregnant, suddenly your body becomes public property and people come up, strangers, and touch your belly and
right.
things like that.
Right. Yeah, and it there's a moment for me that it feels that same. Like suddenly because I'm pregnant, I'm public domain. And because my son is transgender, he's public. Like you can ask him anything. You can ask me anything about anything. Mm-mm.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, this is the same kinds of things, you know, from the public property to, you know, asking inappropriate questions to who gets to be in the military and not. All this is just a replay of kind of the Reagan-Bush era.
Right, right. And I hope, one hopes, we all hope that it's a piece of the growth. It's the painful piece of growth that we have as a culture.
One of the things that struck me while I was watching this play was, and this is probably about as much about your direction, Rod, as it is about the play, but I really felt like you were talking to me, and I felt like you'd never said these words before. Like it was so fresh and so real. It felt very conversational. I assume that was kind of the intention.
It is the intention, but it's also one of Mona's greatest strengths as a performer. Mona has a way of bearing herself and sharing in a way that is powerful and intimate and incredibly moving in everything that I've seen Mona do. Mona is the heart of any production, and that's that's her gift as an artist, to be able to just open herself up to an audience. And it's an incredible thing to see. And it's an incredible thing to be in a room with, you know, every day for the last, you know, year that we've been working on this.
A year you've been working on it?
We have, yeah.
What, I mean, I don't know how long it takes things like that to come to fruition, but why a year? Like, did it take that long for the piece to really come into its own?
Well, it took that time, I think, to learn the language of the piece. And a lot of times, you know, you can write something, you can write material, but then that material is going to live how it wants to live. And so you have to let that happen, and you have to find out where this material is going and what maybe is important but doesn't further the story that we're trying to tell right now. So there was a lot of editing going on, a lot of discussion about style and, you know, how will this work and will this work. The show also incorporates a lot of gesture-based dance, ritual movements that happen. And so a lot of that material came from just conversation, me asking Mona things that aren't in the script, but, you know, like, what do you guys do on Thursdays? What, you know, what's something that you experience that we haven't talked about in the play, but that we can use to add more texture to the material? And so there was a lot of kind of digging and finding. And also, you know, personal schedules get involved.
Right.
Things take time. But we've had incredible gifts along the way of this production. Many people that we've worked with have stepped in to help. Theater Grotesco generously donated their rehearsal space. And so we went from using my girlfriend's living room to going into a space where we can have the weight rack, where we can actually start working with these physical movements that we knew we wanted to do, but we can't be doing, you know, overhead squats and deadlifts in my girlfriend's apartment. So we finally had a space where we could do that. So that took time as well to figure out, well, yeah, this is great and this really moves you, but it doesn't help tell the story.
Yeah. What is it? Kill Your Darlings?
Right.
I have so often wanted to just please show me the outtakes of everything because there's so much beautiful material that doesn't, as you say, further the story, but it's important and it's interesting.
Sure. Well, and it's important for that process.
Right.
But it's not a part of the product. Another thing that both of us kind of dealt with was this idea of, personally, I'm often not interested in solo performance. And I feel like someone once said to me that all art is good therapy, but not all therapy is good art. And so, you know, we're working in a form that can be really dicey. You know, solo autobiographical performance can often be much more about the performer than the story or the material or even the audience and the people around them. And so we were really conscious of and careful to not be doing something that's just for Mona, but that would be for everyone. And for me, this piece has its basis in a mother's experience of a trans child. But more than that, it's about a mother's experience, and it's about love, and it's about giving someone that you love the space to become who they are, which is what love is about.
And good parenting is about.
Certainly.
You make it clear in the play, Mona, that this is really about your journey. It's not trying to be about your child's journey. How is he participating in this, seeing it or not seeing it? What's his relationship to the show?
Before Rod and I went very far, certainly before we got into any kind of real rehearsals, I had a conversation with my son. I did not want to do this without him approving of it. And not just telling him, oh, I'm going to do this, but I had a really frank conversation with him about what kinds of things are in the piece, and that I understand that if we're talking about the same experience, he would have experienced it very differently, and he might not see it the same way, and he might actually hate something that I've put in the piece. And his response was, yeah, and you'll hate something I might put in something I write, because I will see it differently. And so I got actual permission from him, and he's been super supportive. There's a lot in the piece about one of the ways that he dealt with his anxiety was baking. So he has baked for us. We did a preview and we were part of the Santa Fe Theater Walk and we had his baked goods there. And we will have that during the run of the show as well. He's actually starting today. He's experimenting with two new cookie recipes, by the way, for the opening on the first. So he's supportive, but he also won't see it.
Yeah, probably just as well. Are you going to tape it in case he wants to see it, you know, 30 years from now?
When I'm dead? I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
well, we hope to document it, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we would love to. I'm really hoping that this isn't the end of this project, that this production at the Swan, that this show, I think, is it's timely and it's moving. And I really think that it could be done elsewhere. It doesn't have a gigantic set. It's really portable. And so, yeah.
And it's really good.
It is. It's one of the most important things I think I've ever been a part of, really. I'm so proud of this and proud of the work that Mona's doing. So, yeah, we'll absolutely film it, and not to, like, put it out on YouTube or something, but to have a document and a trailer, a commercial that we can send to other theaters and other solo performance theater festivals, things like that we're very interested in. Another thing that I wanted to mention about Mona's son's experience of this show is we actually spent a lot of time, Mona and I, talking about, can we even tell this story?
Yeah.
Is the time right now to say Mona's side of this? You know, is it right that the cis people are telling this trans story? And are we exploiting her child? Are we dangling his experience like a carrot to get people into the theater? You know, there's some really kind of almost ethical questions about the show and this story. And we spoke with some people. I spoke with some friends who are in the trans community. And I said, is this valid? Is this okay? Can we tell this story? And a friend of mine said to me, absolutely. You know, everyone, no one transitions, no one goes through these kind of things alone. And so the parents' story is absolutely just as important. But we've been really sensitive towards the subject matter and hoping to not be exploitive and to not say things that we're not allowed to say right now.
Yeah.
Well, that question of who's allowed to say what has gotten so sort of hair trigger these days in the politically correct world we live in. And I don't use that term, you know, in as negative a way as other people. I think on some level it's a way of being respectful to mm-hmm. others. But the question of what you are or not allowed to do, I mean, you're artists and you have a story to tell. And I don't, you know, the question of asking permission is a really tricky one that I've actually been reading about and thinking about, because everyone's got their story.
Sure.
Yeah.
But this is a time right now where trans voices need to be heard. And so can our voice be added to that trans voice? Can Mona's voice and Mona's experience?
And the answer is yes.
I believe so.
Yeah.
The play opens on November 1st and runs through November 10th, and it is at the Swan Theater, which used to be called the Adobe Rose.
Yes.
And it's at 1213 Parkway Drive here in Santa Fe. And if people want to find out more, they can call 466-3533. They can also get tickets at motherhoodbarbellstshots.brownpapertickets.com. Motherhood, Barbells, and T-Shots is the name of the performance. Rod Harrison is co-creator and director, and Mona Malik is performer and writer. And you, Rod, of course, are doing 10,000 other things as well.
Well, it's self-produced, so we're keeping it as small as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
But we also need to mention that it is self-produced, but we've had, again, incredible assistance along the way. Scott Harrison and Ironweed Productions is sponsoring this show as well. And this absolutely would not have happened if it weren't for Scott Harrison and Ironweed Productions.
Anything else you want to let people know about before we go?
There's cookies.
There's cookies.
There's
it's
cookies.
Funny.
Cookies.
It sounds like
they come
a heavy
with the
thing,
price of admission. Yeah.
But it's funny. It's warm. It's heartfelt. It's not a tragedy.
Right.
Please, yes, come. It's an important story. And Mona is an incredible performer. And I need a fresh hanky at every rehearsal. You will be moved.
Mona Malik and Rod Harrison, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And the Radio Cafe would like to thank its sponsors, the Santa Fe Institute, the Lannan Foundation, the Lannell Foundation, the Lensic Performing Arts Center, and Southwest Care Center. Thank you all so much for making this show possible. The Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation is once again accepting scholarship applications, and Northern New Mexico residents are invited to apply. Deadline for undergraduate scholarships is the 21st of January, 2020. Deadline for Career Pathways Scholarships in support of two-year degrees, certificates, and trades is November 17, 2019. Criteria and application for both may be found at lanlfoundation.org/scholarships. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.